Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to The United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news as Ruben Amorim faces a familiar problem, a clear out if he is to bring players in. Sell to buy is back on the agenda as Ineos refused to spend in January. We've got the latest on that. Also, Ahmad speaking about a weak mentality last season when Amorim was here that isn't there anymore. Also, is Barcelona going to send Rashford back? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And we'll be talking about what this means for Manchester United and why the constant talk of Manchester United needing to suffer is actually a bit of a joke when we spend more money on our midfield than any other club in the Premier League apart from Man City. So interestingly stuff on that. But how are we all doing this morning? Lots to get into. And we're going to start off with some stuff coming out of The Athletic this morning. So essentially, where we're at, again, is that Ruben Amorim is going to have to clear out if he wants to bring in. This job that Ruben Amorim's been given at Manchester United does become harder and harder by the week, it feels, because obviously this is a guy that's very reluctant to speak positively about any positive result because he's always trying to say, look, you know, who knows what's around the corner. The enormity of the job, he spoke about that pre-Crystal Palace. And it goes back to everything we've ever said before. Are Ineos, just the Glazers, a wolf in sheep's clothing? Because everything just seems to follow the same pattern. We're already getting things like this coming out from The Athletic. From a Manchester United point of view, they could do with strengthening, but they don't see January as the ideal opportunity to do that. I mean, you know what? This is Manchester United, the great institution. You know, the biggest football brand in the world with Real Madrid, Barcelona and maybe Bayern Munich. And they don't see January as an opportunity to improve a broken squad. I mean, at what point did we cease becoming a football club and become idiots? 2005? Maybe. So from a Man United point of view, they could do with strengthening, but they don't see January as the ideal opportunity to do that. If something came onto the landscape, they could act quickly, but from my understanding, it would be a loan in and a loan out kind of thing. That's from Laurie Whitwell in The Athletic. And this is why the thumbnail says, not again, because we sort of alluded to this on the show last night. Remember Mark Ogden said, Man United, if they can offload some players in January, may be tempted to go and spend big on a Elliot Anderson or an Adam Wharton, etc. But I did say, when you read the detail of that story, what it's actually saying is, Man United, if they're going to spend big, won't do anything until the last week of January, until everybody's back from the AFCON, and then they can look at it. And all that is we're definitely not spending money in the first 3 weeks of the January transfer window, which basically shuts you all up for three quarters of it. And then with only a week, we'll ride the storm out, and then it'll be shut, and then we can't do anything. A la last year, where last year we did exactly the same. All right, we brought Dorgu in, but it wasn't exciting. It was a 20-year-old from a lower relegation-threatened Serie A side. And then when the window closed, they told some bullshit story about Kenda, who a month later signed for Chelsea. At some point, well, it doesn't have to change, does it? Because we're run by mercenaries. But this constant insistence that January is not a time to improve the Manchester United squad is painstakingly irritating. It really is. It's so frustrating. And to read that and try and compute it in your head as a purist football fan who just wants the team you love to be successful, I am so tired. It's so draining to be run by these people who just do not have the interests of this football club at heart. They are business people running the club like an Excel spreadsheet. And to read that, from a Man United point of view, they could do with strengthening, but they don't see January as an opportunity to do that. So why, again, did Manchester City last year see January as an opportunity to buy three players and bed them in for this season? Why the previous year did Chelsea see the opportunity to buy three expensive players and bed them in for their future? And look at where Chelsea and Man City are now. They're in the top three, they're in the Champions League, and they're good footballing sides. So I'm sorry, like, I don't know why any ex-player, any media outlet, I don't know why they're so terrified of saying what I'm about to say and what many of you say all the time. Why are Manchester United such a badly run football club, and why do they ignore something that would actually improve them? This team is very far from the finished article. The January transfer window, you could bring two players in that improve us instantly. And then in the summer, you bring a different three or four players in that improve you. So why is Manchester United run as a football club that ignores something where you can get better to make our job harder for our manager, our fans and everybody else? Because it's money. They don't have it, do they? They're just so bad. They're so bad. And we sort of get ground down by it. Like, I was thinking about this morning, like the symptoms that they give off almost make you want to give them a cuddle and go, let's get them some medicine. It's almost like the way the Glazers and Ineos behave, I'm surprised there's not a GoFundMe that you lot aren't funding for because you feel sorry for them. Because that's, you know, I listen to Amrin, I listen to Sir Jim, and it's like this sympathy vote is just incredible. And I don't actually get it. You know, I listen to Amrin coming out, and I have sympathy for Amrin because he's dealing with the situation. But I look at United and it's like, you know, we believe we're a top four team. Well, we're not. We believe that, you know, it's going to take 3 or 4 years. And look, this is from Capology, right? Listen to this. This is probably the most interesting thing you're going to hear today. And it's not from The Athletic and it's not from any news outlet. It would be coming in it's coming in from us, the United Stand. So the current wage bill. So let me just I'm sort of riffing here because there is a lot to get through and I want to get your points. But am I wrong in saying that all we ever hear about Man United from the manager, from the owners, from the players is that this is a hard project. It's a long project. It's a long road. We're going to have to suffer. You know, It's going to take time. If we get fifth place, it'll be a miracle. You know, all this stuff, which we end up repeating, I've repeated it, right? I have said, if Amrim gets top four, he deserves a statue. If he gets fifth place, it's a really good season, right? We fall for, I'm not calling any of you out for falling for this, because we are fed this on a daily basis. We're a long way off. We're going to suffer. We're still not good enough. You know, it's going to take years. Okay. Capology website lists wages paid by Premier League clubs. Number one, Manchester City, £4.3 million a year in wages. Okay. Sorry, a week in wages. Okay. £222 million a year. So let's do it by the week. £4.2 million a week, Manchester City. So you'd expect them to be up there, wouldn't you? In second place, Arsenal, £3.6 million a week. You'd expect them to be up there, wouldn't you? Yeah. Liverpool, £3.3 million a week. Well, they've just won the league. I know they're having a bad time, but, you know, you'd expect that. Chelsea, £3.1 million. There's a theme here, isn't there? The top four wage payers finished in the top four last year and will probably finish in the top four this year. Okay. But the interesting thing is, in fifth place, Manchester United pay nearly £3.1 million a year, just behind Chelsea in wages. So why aren't we comfortably the fifth best team in England competing with Chelsea? We basically pay the same in wages as Chelsea do, and yet our manager and our club are constantly talking about three-year projects. It's very, very difficult. We've got to suffer. And we're paying £3.1 million a week in wages. The sixth place club is Tottenham on 2.5. The seventh place club is Aston Villa on 2.2. And Newcastle are then Forest are 1.8 million. So I can't understand how we are suffering and struggling to get in the top five when we're comfortably in the top five for wages. We've got two of the top five best paid players in the league in Bruno Fernandes and Casemiro. When you look at our midfield, Man City spend £51 million a year in wages on their midfield. Manchester United are second with 26. We pay more money on our midfield than Chelsea, Liverpool and Arsenal. Something just doesn't add up at this football club, because where's the clear out? Mainu isn't on good wages. It's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers, Mr. Miracle. I don't know what the message is from Manchester United, because all I see, and the Athletic have done an article today, Man United can't stop doing it. All we see at the moment is how amazing Luke Shaw is. Oh, Luke Shaw's an incredible footballer. Why is he not being called up for England? He's one of the best players in the world in a one-on-one situation. So we've got all this glaze for these players that have been here for years on massive wages. But on the other hand, these experienced players that have been here for years on massive wages that make up a large portion of this wage bill. But we're going to suffer. We're going to suffer. You know, if we get fifth place, it's incredible. I mean, come on. It's mixed messages. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm so confused about what we can't play good football. The football we play is shit. We've got the fifth best wage bill in the country. We've got the most expensive midfield in the country on wages, apart from Man City. We can't play good football. We're going to suffer. We can't spend money in January. You know what? I never thought I'd say this, but I wish Todd Boehly was in charge, because he might be chaotic, but he does just go out there and go after what they need and spend money. Whereas this Ineos Glazer shagfest or whatever it is just incredibly confusing. It really is. And it goes back to fundamentally what I was saying at the start of the show, how Manchester United can put it out there to their little allies in the Athletic saying, yeah, you know, we could do with strengthening, but we don't see January as an opportunity. I mean, this is why we're going to fail. And look, we've got a great opportunity over the next three games, but let's get real. It's West Ham, Wolves and Bournemouth. Bournemouth are probably the worst team in the Premier League at the moment with Wolves, and West Ham aren't that great. So you can almost see 9 points hopefully coming our way and this continued mantra of, well, we don't need to spend in January. And what will happen is, we'll hit January, we'll play some more difficult games, we'll start losing again, the window will shut, and then we'll mess up Europe. So look, I am confused, but look, Manchester United are a very, very confusing club. But I just feel like I almost want to exclude Ruben Amorim from this, because if he's got to sell to buy, how much of that wage bill has he implemented, really? You know, he didn't sign Casemiro, he didn't sign Bruno, he didn't sign Luke Shaw, he didn't sign Harry Maguire. So all these big earners he's inherited, he has to use. And if he wants to buy his own players, he's got to sell them. And yet he plays a completely different system to what most of these players can play. It's arse about face, really. He's the manager that needs the backing. He's not the manager that needs to sell to buy. And it just kicks the problem down the road and makes it harder and harder and harder, in my opinion. But look, that's my thoughts on that. Also, Manchester United will reportedly listen to offers in January for a number of players, including Mainoo, Xerxes, Ugarte and Malacia. Two of which we shouldn't be selling. You know, I really don't think Xerxes and Mainoo should be gone. And again, they'll almost become the bomb squad that aren't the bomb squad, because I genuinely just think that Mainoo and Xerxes are not, you know, they're both young. They've both got potential and we're selling them because they have a value and other clubs want them, whilst retaining bags of shit on big money who aren't going to be part of our future plans as well. So, I mean, it's the desperation in what we're trying to do. It's this asset stripping, which we've done in the rest of the club to try and get money in to buy. It's a worry. What I'm trying to say is a worrying theme that a football club that pays huge wages to shit that they want to glaze and keep is wanting to sell potential to bring money in to buy players that we desperately need. It's just not. It's not the behaviour of a football club that's heading in the right direction, in my opinion. As I said, I use Chelsea a lot because they're just so ridiculously intelligently aggressive. Like they sell hotels and the women's team to get money in that they can then invest in players that they desperately need now. It is chaotic, it is risky, but that's football. And Chelsea are actually a good team to watch. You know, I don't want them to do well because they've got Garnacho playing them for them. But what Todd Bowley's done, everybody's gone very, very quiet now about. They are one of the best teams in England. They're one of the best teams in Europe. They've got a ridiculously young squad that's getting stronger and stronger by the week. And they've aggressively gone after it. And I look at United and I go, it's not like there aren't teams out there that we could copy their blueprint, but we won't do it. It's almost like, you know, you're trying to get across. You're trying to get across a massive river that's full of crocodiles, right? And on the other side, there's two or three people who've done it saying, this is how we did it. And you go, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to go our own way. And that's what I feel Sir Jim Ratcliffe is doing. There is a lot of people. Man City copied Man United. Liverpool copied Man United under Sir Alex. You can see what they've done. You can see they've tweaked it, but they followed what United did for 20 years. Very, very clearly. You can see it. I've always said that about Jurgen Klopp, and you can see it from Pep. We have an opportunity ourselves now to, you know, look at what other clubs are doing, and we're deciding to do it our own way. You know, whilst Chelsea and Man City, maybe even Arsenal, have this strategic plan to get to the top and you could take little bits from it, we've gone, no, we'll ignore that. What we're going to do is we're going to bring a manager in that doesn't suit the whole ethos of this football club. We're then going to get him to use previous failed managers' players. We're then going to get him to sell assets that could be good players in the future. And then we're not going to get him players into his system straight away. We're going to take a long time to do it. We're going to allow him to get to the brink of the sack and frustrate the media and the fans so that morale's on the floor and excitement isn't really there. And then we're just going to tell everyone that we're going to stick with it. And you sort of like go, so you're going to take ages to give him what he wants. You're going to take him to the brink of the sack so some people don't trust him. And then you're going to tell everyone that you're just going to stick with it as well. Wow, this sounds absolutely scintillating. I'm convinced it's going to work, as opposed to getting your hand in your pocket, finding ways to back him from the start to keep the enthusiasm and excitement going and the trust. It's a crazy way to try and run a football club. Absolutely crazy. And tell me that's wrong. You know, I look at like the buzz around other clubs and the relentlessness and the aggression to compete. And I look at United with this slowly, dead snail shit approach and a manager that already is splitting the fan base, who is on a hiding to nothing. And that's the INEOS approach. You know, we're going to take a long time, but we're going to stick with you. Don't worry about the media. Don't worry about the ex-players. Don't worry about the fans. They're irrelevant. I'm in charge here. I'm going to back you. And we're going to go with. And then Amrin goes, they actually do matter, though, because I speak to them on a regular basis. They are the people that matter. Well, don't worry about them. Peasants, you know, don't worry about them. And I think that's sort of where we are. You know, we can't be sacking another manager. Absolutely not. But it concerns me, the strategy. I'm not even talking about style of play or long throw-ins. I'm talking about the strategy. Just a bit of breaking news coming out. Barcelona are trying to sign Manchester United teenage sensation JJ Gabriel. Sources say United director of football Jason Wilcox was in key in convincing him to stay at the club. United insiders believe the involvement of Wilcox demonstrated to Gabriel's family how much they value the forward and there is confidence. I mean, this is coming in from Prathurst from The Sun. I mean, this is about 3 months old. I actually thought this was something relevant. I mean, that's just basically like going through somebody's bins and then putting it on your dinner plate. I mean, that is about 3 months old. I mean, I don't know whether this is about glazing Jason Wilcox or something, or Luckhurst is desperate to try and get more stuff out of the thing since he's been demoted to The Sun, but I don't know. I don't know what that story's breaking about. It's Breaking Bad, that is. I mean, we know that. Barcelona, Real Madrid, PSG, Arsenal, they all want him. He's basically a generational talent at his age. But Man United have got him to stay for now. It's difficult because he's under 16. Those clubs will still be there. However, at the moment, his commitment is to Manchester United. So, I mean, I don't know why that's breaking news, but some people are posting it out there. Maybe they didn't see it 3 months ago. Football changed when City were bought, says Sam. United are still playing catch up with regards to structure, personnel, stadium and squad. Chelsea twigged early. And this is a great point, Sam, and you can have this conversation or you can't. But I saw a lot of people taking the piss out of Todd Boehly at the start. You know, he wanted to do that North versus South game, which is very American. You know, they have the All-Stars game. And, you know, at the time, a lot of people took the piss out of him, thought he was ruining Chelsea. But I think a lot of us fans looked at it and went, hold on a minute. We can all join in with the pile-on and laugh along with the ex-players at something that they're scared about. Or we can look at it as fans and go, if I was a Man United fan and Todd Boehly owned the football club and he was finding creative ways to spend money on the first team day in, day out, and he spent somewhere between 1 and 2 billion in 2 years, I don't think I'd be taking the piss out of him of a North versus South game. I think I'd be looking at him and going, well, nothing else matters really. You know, we're not a very good football club and we want to be good at football. You know, you can talk about FFP, you can talk about building stadiums, you can talk about infrastructure, you can talk about longevity, but at the end of the day, the most important thing is your team winning on a Saturday afternoon and beating your rivals and competing for major trophies. And Chelsea are doing that. Man United aren't. So, you know, I would take that ownership every single day of the week, and people took the piss out of it. And look, I don't know what the answer is, but that's the answer. The answer is to have an owner that's in tune with the fans, that doesn't sit there telling you, please keep buying these shirts, please keep paying for these corporate tickets, please keep pumping your money into the football club while we don't pump money back. You know, please keep making us relevant and rich whilst paying for it yourself. And United are stagnant. We're stagnant at the moment. And, you know, I think Amrin hopefully is going to keep winning games and providing us with some solace. But I still don't look at that United side and go, it's going anywhere. Even if this team finishes fifth, there's no longevity in it. Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw, Mason Mount, Bruno Fernandes, Casemiro. They're not the future. You know they're not the future. Might be unfair to say that about Mason Mount. We can hope for miracles, but I mean, his body looks broken, and can he play the football we need? Sacking a manager is what the Glazers used to escape judgment, and now with Sir Jim Ratcliffe, we're doomed. How do we move forward? When will we be fed up? 16th, says Old Trafford. I think the issue I have here is that when I hear that United know they need to strengthen, but they don't see January as an opportunity, I feel that sacked the board. I think that is a level of incompetence that should be screamed and shouted about. But you won't get it. The media are too, you know, it's too niche for them. They'd rather shout sack the manager. And, you know, fans have just become intolerant to the truth. And we've started to swallow the shit. And that's why I bring in the wages, because we're told that fifth place would be a miracle. We're told that we're going to suffer. we're told that it's a long road. And then I go, we've got two of the top five earners in the league. Two of the top five earners in the league. We pay the fifth best wages in the league by a very long way. And we're very close to the fourth team in Chelsea. And we pay more on our midfield than anybody in the league apart from Man City. Our midfield, we pay more in wages than Chelsea do, Newcastle do, and any other midfield that shits all over ours apart from Man City. And yet we're being told we've got to suffer, it's going to take time. And you go, hold on, there's a contradiction here. There's a massive contradiction. You're saying we've got to suffer. You're saying it's going to take time. You're saying we've got to cut our cloth accordingly. And yet our midfield is the second best paid midfield in the league. We've got two of the top five best paid players in the league. And we've got the fifth best wage bill in the league. And yet fifth place is like the Holy Grail. Something doesn't add up here. Maybe you need to get rid of some of those wages and spend it. Or maybe you're talking shit to pull the blinkers on a fan base that needs to wake up. It's not acceptable to say that we're not buying players in January because we don't see the opportunity when other rivals have gone out there. Because there'll be somebody in the chat that goes, yeah, but what do you want them to do? They can't sign Amberson in January. Well, how did Chelsea sign Enzo Fernandez in January? How did Manchester City take Marmoush from Eintracht Frankfurt in January when Eintracht Frankfurt were trying to win the Europa League? Why can't we do that to Stiller and Stuttgart? You can do these deals because other clubs are doing them. You can. Patrick Lynch says, unfortunately, and that's the truth. Like, people say you can't get Wharton out of Crystal Palace. Well, Chelsea got Enzo Fernandez out of Benfica. They didn't want to do that deal. Marmoush, Frankfurt, they didn't want to do that deal. You can do these deals. You've just got to have the right ownership to do it, who are focused on football and not bloody spreadsheets. Patrick Lynch, thanks for your super chat. He says, unfortunately, other teams don't have the debt we have. It's tying our hands and it will always be used as an excuse for not doing more. Glazers needed to go, but instead Ineos propped them up. Yeah, and absolutely, Patrick, the debt should never be used by anybody as an excuse because the people who put us in debt are the people who own this football club and they are wholly responsible for that. It is not an excuse to utilise the word debt. My thing is we're getting details on the lack of moves. Loose lips run the club. That's why club taxes the fuck out of us. They know all our moves, says Law of the Dingle. Look, mate, my opinion of the media around Manchester United is they're lapdogs. They're client journalists. They're not proper journalists. I can't remember the last time, and I'm talking years, I can't remember the last time I read an exclusive piece of news on Man United that Man United wouldn't want to be out there. That's journalism. You know, you might not like it, but, you know, over the years, some of the best pieces of journalism are scoops that people don't want to be out there, and they're well-researched, and they're true. I can't remember the last time we had one article at a Man United that was a good piece of journalism, and yet the club, I know for a fact, and you know for a fact, has never been so bad. Like, there are so many stories about Man United that could come out over the last 18 months. Even Ruben Amorim has alluded to them, but they never come out because the media around United are just lapdogs. They're client journalists. They don't dare say anything bad because they'll be cut off. So what they do is they use that media to feed stuff out like this. The Athletic, Laurie Whitwell saying Man United probably won't spend in January because they're doing the drip effect work for them. Let's start putting it out there now. You know, it's tough. It's a challenging market, etc. So, you know, it's my opinion is we have to do something in January. My opinion is don't hold your breath.
Now it's time for a little word from today's podcast sponsor. And as a preview, they have a great discount for you. It's been a long season so far. And after a year of grinding, you've earned a little something special for yourself. This upcoming festive season is all about taking a break, recharging, and actually enjoying the things you want. And that's where Air Up comes in. Air Up lets you drink plain water that tastes full of flavour through scent alone. No sugar, no additives, just simple hydration made better. And for someone who spends as much time talking football as I do, it's been a great addition to the routine. If you want to try it for yourself, hit the link in the show notes or visit airup.link/theunitedstand. And of course, you can use the code GOLD and you get an amazing 10% off at checkout. So what are you waiting for? Smash the link in the show notes or visit airup.link/theunitedstand and elevate your hydration game today.
It's hard to love a club that doesn't love its fans back, says Alan Miller. I love that. I think that is my comment of the day from Alan. I absolutely love that. It's hard to love a club that doesn't love its fans back. But I disagree with the first bit, because I'll never stop loving this football club. You know, all I need to do is get a DVD out and watch a Sir Alex Ferguson season from start to finish for 2 hours and I'm loving it. Or, you know, read a book on the Busby Babes. That's what Manchester United is to me. Manchester United is not the Glazers. It's not these players. It's not even a manager. Manchester United, I will always love. But they don't love the fans. They don't. Hi, Mark. What if the club is cash poor? If the club borrows to buy, we criticise the club for more debt. As a fan base, we have to decide between financial sustainability and erratic spending. Do you agree? Says Ryle. No, I don't. And you can shove your accountancy book up your arse. I don't agree with that. I don't have to do that at all. I don't have to make a decision between financial stability and erratic spending at all. No, I don't. I don't have to do that. Because why did Chelsea not do that? Chelsea had debt. I don't have to make that decision. I have to make a decision about what I think's best for my football club. And I don't think the Glazers are. So I don't have to make that decision because you're making me comply with an ownership model that's got nothing to do with me. I didn't choose the Glazers to put my football club in debt, their debt. I didn't choose for my football club to spend tens of millions of pounds a year servicing debt interest. You know, what cripples this football club is the Glazers. But also, I would say, Ryle, as well, why is the club cash poor then? Because we had £60 million to pay for Belaba that we didn't use. Where's that £60 million gone now then? Has it disappeared? It's still there. That was there 3 weeks before the transfer window closed and we didn't buy anybody. So we know there is a capability to spend £60 million. And we also know that we turned down £90 million for Bruno Fernandes. So the cash rich bollocks, which I'm sure is going to come out in the next few weeks, is bollocks. We've had opportunities to raise money that would buy quality players and we've decided not to do it. What does it take to get the Glazers out of the club, says Liam? A miracle. We need a non-biased Ariel for a football journalist, says Ryan. I mean, we also signed Bruno in January as well, says Raz. Yeah, and he's our best signing since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. Garfield says, if you were manager, Mark, what would you be doing in January? Well, I know what I'd do in January. I'd be buying the best midfielder I can get, and I need two anyway, so if it's absolutely impossible to get Elliot Anderson, Adam Wharton, Carlos Belaba or Angelo Stiller, and I don't think it is. I don't think it's impossible. It might be difficult, but I don't think it's impossible. Then I then would be looking at somebody like Edison or a Conor Gallagher or a Manu Kone, because there are options. Nobody can tell me out of seven options you can't get any of them, because you can. Everybody's got a price. And we, as I said to you last night, we don't know the complexities of the situation at Nottingham Forest, Crystal Palace, Atalanta. We don't know what their personal situations are. You know, they can put it out there that they want 100 million. However, it might be a very different story. There could be release clauses. There could be all sorts of stuff that makes them decide. And you know what? What if Forest already have a replacement for Elliot Anderson that they can get in January as well? So a lot of the time United use difficult as a reason not to do something. We tend to just do easy and what we want, whereas difficult is why big clubs succeed. Difficult deals are what separate you from the rest. And I look at United over the last sort of 10 years, how many difficult deals have we done? I think Lenny Yoro was a difficult deal. You know, I'm not going to pretend we haven't done any. I thought Lenny Yoro was a very difficult deal because it looked like he was going to go to Real Madrid. We spent the money. We got the player. Well done. But the more deals like that you do, the better you get as a football club. And we need to do difficult deals. And it looks to me at the moment we're going, I don't really want to do any business in January because the spreadsheet's not quite right. We'll wait until the summer. And then the difficult deals will be there and we won't get them done. I don't think we'll get Elliot Anderson. I don't think we've got a bloody chance. I honestly do not think we'll get Elliot Anderson. Football is transitional. Owners, managers, players, stadiums, success even come and go. The only constant is the fans. You'd hope the club realise that, says Sam. Yeah, but the thing is, Sam, if you buy a business and you treat it as a business and you know in 5 years' time that business is going to be worth double what you paid for it now, do you need to be emotionally invested? Do you really need to care about the customers? Man United, I mean, somebody said to me about 6 months ago, people say, why did Ineos get into bed with the Glazers? They've paid 1 point something billion for something that in 5 years is going to be worth double, simply because a stadium's going to get built. In a business sense, it's the easiest money you can earn, because United are going to go from 5 billion to 10 billion overnight as soon as that stadium gets built. So that's why they got into bed with the Glazers. A lifelong Man United fan would never get into bed with the Glazers, but a lifelong Man United fan that loves business, that's what that was always going to be about. Until we get proved wrong, that's what that always is going to be about. Right, let me carry on anyway, because there's a few bits to get into this morning. Thank you very much for that. Okay, where are we? Remember, it's a 6:45 show tonight. Loads of you tuned in last night because we've got the Premier League. Obviously, Man United playing tomorrow. I think there is a press conference this afternoon as well. Correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't heard 100%, but I presume we're going to do a press conference. It's a Premier League game, so I think we will be doing one. Luke Shaw's 300th game for Manchester United comes amid good form and health. I mean, this, you know what? I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Right. I have to. Man United are so easy to read. Like, yesterday there were two tweets of compilations of Luke Shaw. There was two last week as well. It's like they're ramming it down our throat. It's like somebody works at Man United and says, you know, with Luke Shaw, we're clearly going to have him for a few years. He costs us a lot of money. And the fan base, I'd say 50% of them don't really like him. We need to get that. We need to change that. We need more tweets of positivity around Luke Shaw, because it's just being rammed down our throat at the moment, right? So Manchester United signed Luke Shaw in 2014, June 2014. So 11 and a half years ago, we signed Luke Shaw. And he's played 300 games, right? And United have given him a placard of 300 games, right? In 11 and a half years. Somebody please do the maths, because that's definitely less than 30 games a season. Oh, but he had a bad injury, Mark. Yeah, maybe we should have got rid of him then, you know? 11 and a half years, 300 games, and they're putting it out there like it's some massive achievement. Just do the maths. 27 games a season. I mean, for a club like Man United, that's, you'd expect to be playing 50 games a season. So 300 games in an 11 and a half years. And United are out there going, oh, yeah, 300 games. And then this from Andy Mitten. Manchester United consider Luke Shaw a top player who understands the game and is very difficult to beat in 1v1 situations. Look, I get it. This is the purpose of communities like this. And I think some people don't understand it. I've read United fan forums for years. Some of them are very, 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 very confrontational. And I like that. Some of them are very tame. The United Stand is a community for all, and we're never going to skirt around difficult conversations. But United, for some reason at the moment, are desperate to push a positive Luke Shaw story every opportunity they can. And it's strange. I find it strange, because whilst he is a good player when he's fit, he's nearly 30 now. And I just don't think that's going to continue. And I'm a bit worried that it's almost like, while he's playing and while he's doing well, let's spin every positive we can, because we know at some point he's going to go back to being injured and we're going to be stuck with him. That's my take on it. But he did play well at the weekend, and I had a big chat with Ricky the other night, and he absolutely loves him. So it's not anti-Luke Shaw. I'm anti-Luke Shaw, but Ricky isn't, and a lot of people on the channel aren't, and a lot of you are, but I'm anti-Luke Shaw. And you know what? Sometimes life is simple as explaining it. I used to back Luke Shaw. I used to like Luke Shaw. I got accused of being a racist for liking Luke Shaw, which I'll never understand, but there we go. But effectively, the reason I've gone off Luke Shaw is because of the TikTok and New Year's. No, it's not. The reason I went off Luke Shaw is because he was injured for 6 months. He wasn't fit. He went to the World Cup. He went to the Euros. He wasn't fit. He played in the final and then he was injured for another 6 months. And I don't like players that prioritise country over Manchester United. And it's as simple as that. And he did it. And he can pretend he didn't, but he did. And when he did that, I went, right, OK, I've invested a lot in you. And you basically went, England are more important. So you know what? If you play for Man United and you play well, I'll give you a good score. But I ain't investing any more time in you being part of our future. I think you're a stopgap. Simple as that. What happens to Bruno if we get two midfielders over the next two windows, says Michael. Well, one of the midfielders sits on the bench and one of them starts, and Bruno starts every week, probably. Bruno has 304 appearances and he joined in 2020, says Patrick Lynch. So Bruno's played 304 times in 5.5 years and Luke Shaw's played 300 times in 11.5 years. Well done, Patrick. If Ineos don't know we need to invest to succeed, then that's an issue. Ineos sold their soul to the devil and Ineos have no control, like they say, says Ray. Tech says you missed my super chat. I'll go back to that, Tech. We also signed that. Garfield, Old Trafford, Malik. Did we read that? Thank you very much. Man United need a board like Barcelona and Madrid. Barcelona and Real Madrid, aren't they a little bit like democracy, memberships, things like that? So, you know, I think that's it. Tech Empire says, might be off topic. All the managers that came post Sir Alex Ferguson never did / wanted reset bar Jose. Ten Hag, Ollie, Ruben ignored it. Certain players always got away, says Tech. I don't think now's the time to analyse that, but I think it's interesting what Ahmad said about how last year the dressing room was really toxic. I don't think that was the word, but, you know, something like that. And this year it's a lot better. And it got me thinking, well, Amrin was the manager last year. Was he talking about before Amrin came in? It can't be, because Amrin came in November and we were shit. So what is it that changed the dressing room from toxic or, you know, not very good to positive this year, even though the manager's the same? Is it simply a pre-season? Is it the changing of a few players? It's hard to tell. Is it Mbeumo? You know, I don't know. I thought it was quite an interesting topic because we haven't changed the manager and we haven't changed a lot of the key leadership team either. But going back to what you were saying there, Tech Empire, I think there's a theme in what Man United like to recruit. And I think you've identified it there. Sir Alex Ferguson would clear a player out, no problem, because he had the authority and aura to do it. Jose Mourinho had the aura and authority to do it. Erik ten Hag, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ruben Amorim, they're all what I call debtors. They're all good managers who would be in debt for being given the opportunity at Manchester United. Like, they're in awe of it. So is that the right type of manager profile for Man United? It's certainly the type of profile manager that the Glazers want because they're manipulated. But a big personality manager is what Man United need. We need an Ancelotti. We need a Klopp. You know, dare I even say a Conte. You need somebody that comes in and isn't in awe of Manchester United in the sense of, you know what I'm doing. I know what needs doing. And this is what needs to happen. Whereas, you know, Ruben Amorim's still a very young manager. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was a young manager. Erik ten Hag was still an inexperienced manager because he only managed Ajax. So we do like to bring in a manager that can be sort of in debt to the club that, you know, what an opportunity we've given you. That's why you're not getting a midfielder, you know. My thing is, why are we getting details on the lack of moves? Have I done that law of the... I think I did do that. Yeah, I did do that. Thank you very much. Okay. If only Shaw and Mount had Bruno's fitness record, says Carlo. Well, look, hopefully both of them are going to play tomorrow, which means they're going to play two games in 4 days. And then we've got another one in 3 days. So, look, hopefully they're going to keep playing. You know, that's the only way to defy those conversations, isn't it? If we qualify for European football next year, says George, how many more players do you think we would need? At the moment, the positions that we need to strengthen wouldn't be enough. Two midfielders wouldn't be enough, says George. If we were in Europe, I think we'd be mid-table this season. I think we'd be in big trouble. If you think about how many games Newcastle have played this year, what are we on? Game week 6 next week of the Champions League? So that's another 5-6 games. I think we'd be in big trouble with that. Really big trouble. I think we'd have a lot more injuries. I saw somebody yesterday. It was on That's Football, actually. No, it was on Terry's channel. And they were constantly spamming, and they were going, Mark said in the summer that this new fitness regime that Amorim had been implemented was a load of bollocks. It's not bollocks now, is it? And I was like, it's Terry's channel, and he never brought it up, so I'll bring it up here. It's not a load of bollocks. A lot of people seem to think that Ruben Amorim gave them all a bloody PowerPoint on how to stay fit, and now everybody's staying fit. Absolutely bollocks. It is bollocks because we have had loads of injuries. Harry Maguire's had 2. Cunha has been injured. Sesko's injured. We've had injuries. They're just not to the players you would expect. Like Mount. Well, Mount's had 2 injuries, actually. He has had 2 injuries already this season. Luke Shaw's not been injured. Casemiro's not been injured. So we have still had injuries. But also, as Savage says, we're playing 1 game a week. I mean, there has to be an expectation that you're going to lower your injuries when you're lowering your load by 50%. So I think that we have had injuries. We've still picked up injuries. And if we were playing in Europe, I think we'd be really struggling. I don't think we're set up for Europe. The hilarious thing is, and I'll go back to this again, right? We pay 3.1 million pounds a week in wages, which is basically what Chelsea pay, but they're in Europe. Tottenham pay £2.5 million a week in wages, 600 grand less than us. They're in Europe. Newcastle pay 2.2 million a week in wages, £900,000 a week less than us, and they're in Europe. So we're paying a lot of money for a squad that's not even in Europe. We're definitely paying European wages, but that squad's not ready for Europe at all. I mean, we don't need to worry about it now because we might not be in Europe, but we are not prepared for Europe at all. So I think you make a great point, George. And this is why we go back to January again. Are you telling me that if we get into Europe, we're going to buy 8 players so that we're ready for Europe? We're not going to buy 8 players. And this is why January is so important as well. And this is why the Glazers and Ineos are full of shit. Because to say January is not an opportunity, they want Europe. If we're in Europe next year, we need 7-8 players because we are not ready for it. You're not going to buy 7 or 8 players in the summer. So we're going to be short. And then Amorim's going to suffer. And then it's going to be Amorim out again. I can see United getting 5th place this year and next year as sacking Amorim because he struggles under the weight of a squad that's not able to do Europe. I can really see next season being more challenging than this year. I can see this season being quite positive. I can see 5th place. But next year, I think we're going to struggle. And that's why January is important, because that's what Man City did. Man City bought 2 or 3 players in last January, preparing for this season. And then in the summer, they brought in another 3 or 4. So overall, they brought in 6 or 7 players, didn't they? That's what United should be doing. We should be looking at what Man City did and going, if we can get 2 or 3 players in January and then another 3 or 4 in the summer, in a World Cup summer, that gives us 6 or 7 players to go into next season and be prepared. And football is about the now, but it's also about future planning. And I mean, people talk about Casemiro going, Harry Maguire going, Bruno Fernandes going. That's 3 players you need to replace plus another 3 that we need. We're not signing 6 players in 1 summer in a World Cup year. So why aren't we utilising January? It's very obvious. Kai says, considering the Gibbs-White situation, Anderson deal is almost impossible in January, says Kai. And if only, I've done that one from Carlo. We're run by orthodox tight arse, words by Del Boy, says Simon. Prem teams rarely starters sell in January, says Kay. Yeah, but mate, this is what I'm talking about. You're almost swallowing the Glazer bullshit book. There are players that can be bought in January because people have been doing it for the last 3 years. And what you're basically saying is, well, it's too difficult, so let's don't do it. Let's take your theory, right? You can't get Anderson in January. Well, you can't get him in the summer. So maybe you go for the alternative in January that could be Angelo Stiller. It could be Manu Kone. It could, you know, we need players in January. As I said to you yesterday, I think this is the best analogy of all time. The roof is leaking. The builder we want isn't available till the summer, and he might not be available then anyway. But there is a builder that will come and fix that leak now. Do you wait till the summer for the builder that might not be available, or do you get the leak fixed now? It's the winter. It's going to rain a lot. Fix the fucking leak, you know? Against the current bottom half teams, we have a 20% win ratio. Against the current top half teams, it's 62.5. Why are we not beating the easier teams, says Tara. Come back to me in 3 games time, because I think that's about to change. I'm not allowed to predict, but I think it is about to change. Elliot Anderson looks like the primary focus at the moment, but you've got to also look at Adam Wharton, who's a different type of midfielder, says Laurie Whitwell. Well, we're talking about the summer again, aren't we? Let's kick it down the road, and then in the summer they'll go somewhere else and we'll end up with a player that we could have got in January. Marcus Rashford, what do you think about that, Mark? I was quite surprised by that story yesterday, and I was watching the show with Terry, and I was like, so a report in Barcelona is that the most likely outcome is that they are going to send him back, even though he's done quite well. I have a different opinion on this. Look, we can't just take news reports as read. Otherwise, what are we as a community? We're here to question. We're here to debate. My personal take on the Rashford thing, Gav says, is he homesick? I don't think he's homesick. I think it might just be early bartering from Barcelona. I mean, they're a football club that doesn't piss about and doesn't get taken for a ride. And I think that essentially he is doing well there. He's a massive brand player, which helps Barcelona. If you've got a good player and they're a brand, happy days, you know? So that's what they've got with Rashford. He's cheap. He probably would take a bit of a wage reduction as well. So why would they not want to do that deal? Maybe because they want to get the price down even lower. So I don't see that Barcelona, and it's not, I don't see Barcelona wanting to send him back unless they've got somebody better lined up. But I don't buy into it. I think Rashford's got a really good opportunity of going to Barcelona. And if he doesn't go to Barcelona, I still think that the Bayern Munichs, the PSGs of this world would look at it and go, in our league, he would do quite well. I don't think there'd be many Premier League clubs looking at him. I don't think they would, because I think in the Premier League, it's very, you know, looking at Rashford over the last 3 years, I think he struggles a bit in the Premier League. But I think in the European scene, we saw it last year with Ten Hag. He was brilliant in Portugal in that first half. So I think he suits the European scene. And I think there'd be a lot of clubs interested in him. So I'm quite relaxed about it, really. I mean, look, there's always the scenario that Amrin gets sacked. We go back to a 4-3-3 and he's starting for United next season. I don't think that's good for anybody, by the way, but you never know. So I'm very relaxed about the Rashford situation. But I think Barcelona is still a very likely outcome, to be honest. When was the last time we bought a Premiership player in January, says Average? Well, I think it was a fair point what somebody said before. It's difficult to get Premier League players in January, but does every player we need to buy, do they have to be a Premier League player? I don't think they do. I really don't think they do. I think there's some good options out there. Conor Gallagher's a Premier League player playing in La Liga as well, so it doesn't always have to be like that. I think it's... the reality is, we have to do something in the January transfer window, and it feels a little bit like, and I want to say this again, I do feel sorry for the manager, because he didn't get a midfielder in the summer. That's on the ownership. And they're now putting stuff out there that they might not do anything in January. And he might need to sell to buy. And that's not how a Man United manager should be working. Not in the first formulative months of your career. You need support. Like, this is where you borrow money. This is where you find the money. You don't bring a manager in who's under huge pressure to succeed and then go, we're going to make your job harder by not supporting you. I mean, he's basically using Ten Hag's midfield. Well, there's no basically about it. He's using a midfield that failed Ten Hag. That is what Amorim's not been given one midfield signing. The most important area in a football team, and they've given him no midfielders. They're basically saying, work a miracle with Ten Hag's midfield that got him sacked. That's incredible to me. That is absolutely incredible to me. And then they're saying you need to sell to buy. If that's the state of Manchester United, then this ownership should not be in charge. You know, it's not going to make it work, is it? In my opinion. Okay, we'll leave it there because I'm desperate for a coffee. Although I've got my air up. Thank you very much. Chapman, you're blocked. See you later. Anana is coming back. No, he's not. I would take Rafinha as a swap for Rashford, says John. Just like the first time, if you take shots, you won't score, says Vincent. And would you take Rashford back, says Jaden? No. No, I don't think we should be going back. Doesn't mean it won't happen, but I don't think we should be going back. I think there's too many people who've given up on Rashford in a Man United shirt. And I think he's said too many things that would sort of make it difficult for him to come back and pretend that, you know, everything's good. I think it's time to move on. I think it's time to move on. And also, we shouldn't be taking steps back. We need to take steps forward. Gomez or Gallagher would not get any minutes anyway, says Melch. Well, they would if they're players that Amorim wants. If you bring players in that Amorim wants, then they will get picked, certainly. Okay, thanks everyone for watching. Stay safe, take care, and I'll speak to you all on the next one. I'm live with you at 6:45, and we have got a press conference reaction, I'm told, as well, at about 1:30. So lots to get involved in. And it's Premier League night on That's Football at 7:30. Can you see my Stiller super chat, says Raphael? Let me just quickly check that for you. Sometime, no, I've got it. I look at Verts and his adaption to the league. Stiller should be done in January if we go that way while we have Casemiro. Avoid the flop talk with time. I think this is a great comment. I really do. We did it with Evra and Vidic ourselves. We brought them in January. Liverpool did it with Gakpo. Chelsea did it with Enzo. Liverpool did it with Gakpo. Man City did it with Mamouche and Gonçalves. It really helps to bring them in January because there's less expectation on a player that comes in January. It's almost psychologically fans go, well, it's the middle of the season. It's difficult to come in the middle of the season. And you get that extra 6 months that they don't get when they come in the summer. It should be the same, but people don't get the patience in the summer as a new signing. Well, they've had a pre-season, they should be good. You bring them in January, they get 6 months to adjust, and then they hit the ground running in the next season. It's an intelligent time to buy as well. Very good comment, Raphael. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. I'll speak to you on the next one.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.